Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Saving the Streets. We're so excited you're here. This is a new podcast, but we're just going to start by introducing ourselves.
Hey, Alex and Mark. How's it going?
Hey, Adele. The hosts are going to be me. My name is Alex and Adele. So I'm just going to give you a little background. I work in PR and marketing in the pet industry for a company called Whisker Media. And I also co-run Saving Lives with two A's for Alex and Amber, the other founder. But that gives you an idea where the name Saving the Streets comes from. A bit more about me, you might be able to hear it. I am French. And as much as I try to get rid of this accent, it does not go away.
We have that in common, Alex. I tried to get rid of my American accent as much as possible.
It won't
pick up on it.
I mean, some people do manage to get rid of it, and I'm impressed because for me, I love it when sometimes people ask me, can you try to do an American accent? And I'm like, that's what I'm trying all the time when I speak. So, yeah. And then this podcast is going to be all about rescuing animals. And for me, I've always considered animals my equals. And I actually became vegetarian when I was 7 and then vegan a bit later when I was 17. And then I started to get involved with animals rescuing early 20s. I think when I was 20 years old, I went to Bali and I worked with Bawa, which is one of the biggest rescue on the island. And I stayed with them for 7 months and it was absolutely eye openings. And right after that, I went to Greece and I lived there for 4 years. It is where I started my own TNR rescue, Saving Lives. And it is also where I found my absolute soulmate, my little kitty cat, Tsatsiki. And now we both live together in Vancouver. So yeah, that's like a little background about me. And I can talk for hours. So I'm just going to give the microphone to Adele.
That's awesome. And Greece is actually where we met, isn't it? It's funny how we both come from far away and have wandered all around the place, often following rescue and animals and how to help. And wound up in the same place, doing the same thing, similar things, on the same kind of mission. And here we are to share what we've learned with people we've met. I have a kind of similar story. I grew up in the United States on the East Coast. And I think like a lot of people who grow up in like the United States and the UK, we're quite separated from animals. Almost like a lot of people I know haven't got into rescue or working with animals when they were in their home country. Instead, they went abroad and you just kind of find them along the way, like you did in Bali and like I did in Vietnam. So I got started working with animals in Vietnam and Cambodia and traveled around a bit after that. I worked a lot with sanctuaries and rescues and kind of had this idea of that's the way that I can help animals, right? Being in a shelter or a sanctuary and rescuing animals firsthand. And I quickly realized most people in rescue want to instead work on prevention. So prevention being spay and neuter and vaccination and trying to prevent the need for rescue. And that's how I ended up focusing on spay neuter and eventually wound up in Greece working on that.
That is so true, because we started Saving Lives the same way. When I first moved to Greece, I was in a shelter, cat rescue, and they were just, you know, taking some cats off the streets and putting them up for adoption, but they were never doing any spaying or neutering on the streets. So I was like, we're giving a shot at life at this cat, but what about the rest? What about the rest of them? This is a non-ending cycle. It's not going to resolve anything to just take one cat and get that cat adopted. I mean, of course, we'll change that cat's life, right? But what about the other thousands ones? So yeah, it's that realization that actually taking a cat is not going to change much, whereas spaying and neutering is actually going to change things.
Right. I think we hear a lot of people say, rescue changes the life for that individual, but it doesn't turn off the tap of the circumstances that brought them into that situation. And a lot of people in rescue end up completely overwhelmed and frustrated that they're not making an impact. Personally, working in prevention, TNR specifically, has made me feel like I do have more of an impact, because even if I am intervening in just one animal's lives, which generally we are helping the entire colony, it's not just that one, but even if we are helping just that one, there's a ripple effect of all these other animals who do not end up in that same situation. And that feels really fulfilling to me.
And I completely agree. And so that's going to bring us to today's first topic for our first podcast. I feel like it's a hot topic because I've been seeing more and more. It's TNR versus TNVR. So TNR stands for trap, neuter, return, and not release, as some people say, because you're not releasing a cat anywhere. You're returning them to where you took them. And TNVR, you is trap, neuter, vaccinate and return. And I'm so happy to do this today with Adele, because we had a few conversations about it. And in Greece, saving lives does mostly TNR and not TNVR. And so that's why I really wanted to talk about this, because, you know, it's a question of money, means, what kind of vet you have in front of you, what kind of diseases you have around your colonies. And I do think it's really important that we talk about it.
Definitely. My organization as well, Travel Animal Rescue, does not vaccinate every cat we come across. And it is definitely coming from a lack of resources, particularly finances. But vets and their protocols also play a part in this, as well as cultural and societal beliefs around the implementation of vaccination. But I think for a lot of us who are just trying to sterilize as many cats or dogs as we can, vaccination is not on the top of our list, because we want to stop them replicating predominantly. But it's an interesting question, because, you know, I personally think there's a reason why we are not doing what has happened a lot of times in the past when dealing with animals on the street, which is trap, shelter, euthanize, or trap, euthanize. And that's what a lot of government programs have done in the past, just to address how many animals are on the street. But that doesn't work based on the research that people have done. It doesn't actually stop populations from growing, and it does nothing to help those individuals. So that's, I think, where the interesting point is around vaccination, because vaccination is purely done for those individuals' well-being, the colony's health, and things like that. So we can talk more about that.
My first question, Adele, is what kind of vaccines do you give a cat when you do TNVR? Do you do rabies? Is it the FFF? Like, which one is it?
So there are a few different types. I think a lot of countries mandate rabies. So that one definitely depends on where we live, where we're doing that work. A lot of countries mandate rabies because rabies is a zoonotic disease. So it's more human-centric rather than animal-centric, because we actually don't see a lot of rabies in Greece. A lot of people in rescue I've talked to said, what's the point of vaccinating for rabies? I've never met a cat with rabies. Which, of course, we know herd immunity is important, and that's why we vaccinate, even if we don't see the disease. But the other options are the triple infectious disease and quadruple infectious disease vaccines. Obviously, the quadruple covers more. It doesn't cover everything, but it's also a little bit more expensive. It might be a few euros. It might be 15 euros. It depends. So it brings in this question of, do we have the resources to vaccinate at all? Do we have the resources to vaccinate for just three? Can we vaccinate for four? What can we do versus what is needed?
Yeah, I agree. And especially when, I mean, you look at it in Greece, for example, when we sterilize a male cat, it's around 20 euros. And so if you add the vaccine, that is between 15 and 20 euros, you're also asking yourself, well, if I don't vaccinate those cats, I can sterilize way more.
Yeah, exactly. We always think about, when we're putting resources into one individual, how many more can they help with that? It's a really tricky balance.
Yeah, I agree. And so, question about, yeah, those diseases that are covered by the triple or quadruple vaccine, are they, do you think they're easily transmitted in colonies, in cat colonies or dog colonies?
Definitely. So a few of the things that the quadruple vaccine covers is very common diseases we see, like chlamydia and herpes virus. These are the viruses that cause the cats to have gunky eyes and maybe respiratory problems, running nose, things like that. We see this everywhere, and they get it from such a young age, and they can also get it from their mother. So if we are going to vaccinate, it is definitely a useful one in Greece to go for the quadruple. In other places, it might be different. And there are other different types of things that countries have. So, for example, in Southeast Asia and Vietnam, Cambodia, Indonesia, Philippines, parvo and distemper is a lot more common, particularly in dogs. And so they might prioritize a vaccine that covers that. And also rabies. Rabies is a lot more common there.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the region that you're in. But we definitely see a lot of preventable infectious disease among cats in Greece. What about you? What have you seen?
Yeah, I've seen definitely chlamydia going around everywhere. So that in Greece. So I also know that we had one colony where, like, when we showed up, there was already kittens, right? And we sterilized everybody, like all the adults. And we sterilized the kittens once they were adults as well. But kittens kept showing up. And so we had a few, we call them mama, even though they were already sterilized, but they had already so many babies that they were kind of like the matriarchs of the colony, you know? And every time there was a new kitten coming in, they were kind of taking that kitten under their wings, which was, you know, really, yeah, it was really sweet. But then again, yeah, if that mom, which is not really a mom anymore, still has chlamydia, she can transmit it to that new kitten just by being around, you know, like just protecting and like, you know, sharing food bowls and water bowls and like just grooming them. So in that case, I definitely think it would be so helpful because, I mean, we've seen so many cases of those kittens with those eyes and it's just heartbreaking to see, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I think this is a defining factor. Like when you are out on ground, in field, on the street, seeing this all the time, it's super clear that all of this is preventable and what we need to do. The people who either don't feel like sterilization is ethical or necessary, they're not seeing the gravity of the situation the way we are. It becomes a lot more clear when you're the one not only physically cleaning it up, but also funding the care. So I think the question around vaccination is really interesting because in a way, it's similar to why we do spay and neuter, because we're preventing a situation from occurring that is a welfare issue for these animals, right? So we spay and neuter to prevent reproductive related issues for their populations and them as individuals. And that's the same ethos we would use to justify vaccination. I think there are a lot of hesitancies, again, culturally specific around vaccination at the same time as sterilization, though, right? So what have you heard in vet clinics or from people in the community around, or even other rescue groups around why they maybe are a bit hesitant to vaccinate at the same time as sterilization for community cats?
Yeah, so I have actually just an example. So I am from France and my parents live in the countryside and they have two cats that are indoor and outdoors. And in the, they live, yeah, so like in like an old farm thingy. So they have like a lot of stray cats around. Yeah, there's a lot of stray cats in France. We couldn't believe it, but there are a lot of them. And they're not sterilized. And so when I first started to do this in Greece, every time I would come back to France, to my parents' house, I'll be like, well, I'm going to trap here as well and, you know, sterilize them. And it's weird because when I took them to the vets, they didn't even think about vaccinating them. Like they never told me, oh, we should vaccinate those stray cats. So even in a country like France, you know, that has more resources maybe than Greece in animal welfare, it never occurred to the vet to vaccinate those stray cats. And then I was talking to my mom because my cat Tzatziki caught parvo while in Greece.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which was, you know, hi, Tzatziki.
There
which
she
was,
is.
Here she is. She's still alive, which was absolutely, you know, terrifying and terrible. And then I told my mom because she wanted to come visit me. And I was like, it's fine, but parvovirus is so contagious that it's going to stain your clothes. Like, you know, I was freaking out about her going back to her cats and giving it to our cats. And so I was like, you need to take your cats to the vet so they can get vaccinated because they never got vaccinated. And then we got to the vets and the vets were like, they're 7 years old. There's no use to vaccinate them. So even in France, which, you know, I always saw when I saw the well-being of cats in Greece, I was like, oh, in France, we're doing so much better. But are we really? Because like the vets were like, no, it's no use. So yeah, it's a question. So I get that a lot. It's like they already have the antibodies for it if they are an adult cat. So they don't really need to be vaccinated. And I've heard that from Greek vets, from French vets, and even in Bali, I've heard it as well. So I was a bit like, but is it really? I mean, maybe they're stronger than a kitten, right? But they might not have the antibodies if they haven't been exposed to the disease. It's not because they're an adult cat that they will have the antibodies.
It, to me, kind of sounds like an assumption that is made rather than something based on knowledge, which it is important that our beliefs around this are based on science and data rather than just cultural. Yeah, I mean, there is no way to know that for sure. If a 7 or 8 year old cat has come into contact with a virus and they have built antibodies against it, there's no way to know. And if I had a cat who tested positive for parvo, I would separate them from all cats no matter their age. It's not like I wouldn't separate them from the adult cats just because they've probably come into contact with it. Another thing to consider is some viruses mutate and they have many different variations. So coronavirus and parvo and things like this, they have different mutations. And anytime they're in a different host, it works the same with humans as well. There's a possibility of change and mutation. So that's just another reason why vaccination can be useful. I think one hesitancy I've heard in Greece is the fear that already putting through a surgery and they might already be immunocompromised. They might already have viruses that we know nothing about, even if they appear non-symptomatic and relatively healthy. So why add another stress to their immune system? What do you think about that?
That is a really good question. And also something that would worry me because, you know, we're putting them through a lot, especially females, I think. Males, the surgery for male is a bit less invasive, right? But for females, it's a heavy surgery, right? Especially if they like, we do an abortion at the same time, then that's like a really heavy surgery. So it's like, do you really want to add a vaccine on top of that? Like, what if they can't fight it? So I know when we talked about, you said that in the case they actually get the vaccine while getting sterilized, they have a certain protocol to follow. Right? You said like something about a vet having to check 30 minutes later.
So if I was incorporating vaccines with the sterilization procedure, I would, of course, also be including internal and external parasite treatment.
Yeah.
In addition to checking the ears, the mouth, the eyes, ear mites in need specific treatment for that. We're doing a general check for all vitals as well, treating any wounds they have, making sure if they need dental care, they're getting that. So it is potentially a lot. But the reason why we might decide to vaccinate is the same reason why we're doing everything else. They might need it. And sometimes this is our one opportunity to do all of these things if they are a free-living wild individual who we may never see again. So if that is the justification we're using to go ahead with vaccination, then I would have a protocol in place, but obviously being on board and comfortable with it and having a trusting relationship that they're going to do their due diligence to make sure that this procedure is followed. So yeah, so immediate concerns following vaccination would be shock or an allergic reaction. And what I understand, that could occur within around 30 minutes after vaccination. So there should be a more intensive observation period, regardless of if you're vaccinating them or not. After surgery, there should be that observation period, but we should also be aware those things might come up and we should be prepared to deal with them. And then ideally, any vet who is putting an animal through a surgery is keeping them under observation for 24 hours in their care and making sure that they are fully awake and fed and watered and okay and non-symptomatic before they're returning them to the carer. Now, again, that depends on where you are. You know, are you participating in a big TNVR camp where all these people are bringing animals to like an open air space and we're just sterilizing them and then vaccinating them and then they're taking them home? So there's lots of different cases that might occur when we're doing TNVR. But in an ideal world, the vets have them under their care for at least 24 hours before sending them on their way to make sure there is no adverse effects after vaccination.
And one thing that we know, because we've been through it, is finding a vet that you trust is one of the most important things you need to do when you start doing TNR. And I know sometimes it can be hard because if you live on a, you know, in a remote place where you don't have many choices and, you know, there's only one vet, really focus your energy on building a trusting relationship. And if you like, you know, maybe you can both make compromise, but that will be so helpful. And you can even talk with your vet about like, what do they think about the vaccination? Like if you are on an island, for example, maybe vets know more about the stray cats colony here. What kind of diseases do they come across? So it's really important that you talk to your vet and that you build that trusting relationship, because it is important that when you do TNR, TNVR, that you are improving the animal life, right? The animal's life. So you want to be sure that the vet is on the same page as you and that they're going to do everything you ask them to do. Because as Adele said, it's for the animal, when you trap them, it's their one shot at everything. It's their one shot at getting all the treatment they can have in at once. So you need to make sure that the vet is willing to do that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think also as foreigners who have been doing these kinds of interventions in particularly the global south, it's important that we approach these kinds of relationships as a conversation. A lot of what we're saying right now is not prescriptive. It's culturally dependent. And we also don't know as much as a vet who has been through medical school. So in my opinion, these kinds of things are much more of a discussion and should be catered to each region's and group's situation and goals. And yeah, I think a relationship with a vet should be collaborative, mindful, but also hoping to find vets who are open-minded and have the same goals as we do. We meet a lot of vets in general all over the world. It's not regionally specific, that are a lot more resistant to change and introducing new things. And I'm going to prioritize doing work with vets who are interested in potentially introducing a better pain relief protocol, are interested in at least discussing which types of vaccines they would be comfortable doing. Why are you not comfortable doing a surgery at the same time as the sterilization surgery? Let's talk about it and figure out what decision is best for the individuals, not just treat them like numbers and not just use a prescriptive protocol, regardless of what the vet thinks and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I agree with that. And so Adele, you talked quickly about Travel Animal Rescue, which is your own organization where you do trap cats on your own. And that's when you do TNR because you're missing usually the resources to vaccinate them at the same time. But you also are a full-time trapper, which is your full-time job. And with that, do you do TNVR?
Yeah. So for the project that I have been working for the last year, which is for another organization, the goal was to help upwards of 1,000 cats, and we were able to introduce vaccination for some of them. So we obviously do rabies because it's required. Sorry, there's a cat on my curtain rod. That was, as there is, you know, that's how it goes in our houses.
Yeah.
So we do introduce vaccination at the same time as sterilization. The reason being kind of what we pointed to before, that infectious diseases are really prevalent in Athens, in Greece. That's where we're doing this project right now. And yeah, we see a lot of preventable illnesses where cats end up needing rescue or at least long-term hospitalization and recovery, which would have been preventable if we had introduced vaccinations. And then we're also using the risk-benefit analysis, which results in the decision that because most of these cats are urban and therefore semi-wild, we are probably never going to meet them again. Friendly urban cats are few and far between. That's pretty normal. They live in a city with cars and people. So we really want to make sure that when we are intervening, we are giving them everything that we can when they need it. and that they're not left anything or any worse off because of our intervention. So yeah, we definitely have protocols in place around the time of vaccination and yeah, observation to make sure that nothing comes up. But there is always a risk. There's always going to be a risk that we have to acknowledge to introducing vaccination or surgery in general.
Yeah.
You know, we're opening them up. We're making them susceptible to illness. They have to recover. They may already have an active infection going on. So we don't know their history. We've just met them. Therefore, we have to acknowledge there is a risk to that and be willing to take care of whatever after effects might come up.
Yeah, I agree. But I was mentioning that, so you're two different approaches because of, you know, the difference in resources, right? One is your own organization, the other one is your job. But, you know, you've also traveled quite a bit and you've asked for a lot of grants to fund Travel Animal Rescue. When you've asked for grants for TNR, have you ever seen like organization pushing for TNVR, or have you yourself pushed for TNVR when you ask for money? Yeah, just wondering how, because I know with Saving Lives, we've asked for grants. We've never pushed TNVR. We've always only pushed TNR and we receive grants that way. I don't know how it would be received if we pushed TNVR. I don't know if the organization would be happy to give us more money or if they would just still give us the same amount. Yeah, I just wanted to know if you had any experience in that.
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. And for anybody who is an individual but trying to fundraise or apply for grants to cover costs so that they can help more animals, it's a super relevant question. I've found a lot of organizations who provide grants already push back on a standard cost of a sterilization and are not interested in covering anything other than simply doing the spay or the neuter. They will also reject proposals where they feel the cost of the sterilization is too high.
Yeah.
And as I said before, that cost is often 20 or 30 euros.
Yeah.
I've seen proposals rejected that said even that was too expensive. So I definitely think the funding organizations have that same approach, right? Just sterilize as many animals as possible. Don't even worry about anything else that relates to their individual or their colony's well-being or other preventable things that might come up in the future. And that can be really frustrating for us. Admittedly, I haven't submitted proposals that included vaccination, and that's something that I would like to do change because it is really important. But when I was starting out, I had the same mindset. I just need to sterilize as many cats as possible. If I'm applying for $1,000, how many cats can I sterilize? Right? That's the mindset that we go into. Wow, I can sterilize this many cats and I'm going to write that in my pitch and it's going to be such a high number of cats that I can sterilize and then they're going to approve it. That's the thinking that we go into it with. So it's easy to fall into that. But it also, we are often not afforded the opportunity to introduce things like vaccination or dental surgery or amputations if they need them.
Exactly. And so it's also, you know, if you are doing it on your own or if you have a small budget as an organization, I just want to tell you, like, don't feel bad if you can't provide vaccines, because also the bigger organization who might be able to fund you might not provide you that opportunity, right, to give you more money for vaccines. So I do want to say that for everybody who's listening to this podcast, you are all aware of what TNR is, or at least you're remotely interested in it. And if all you can afford is to provide basic care and sterilization for a cat or a dog, you're already doing so much for that animal. And yeah, vaccination would be, you know, would be great. If we could vaccinate everybody, that's what we would aim for. But sometimes it's not doable. So I also, you know, don't feel too bad about it if you're already providing basic care and sterilization.
Yeah, definitely. It is completely cost dependent. And again, with the vets being on board. So if we can't achieve that, sometimes it is what it is. And the goal, I think, is doing the best we can within the resources that we have and being honest and constantly asking ourselves, are we doing the best that we can? Can we do more? Can we get a little bit more? What if I do next time apply for at least the triple vaccination? Forget the rabies, forget the quadruple, at least a triple vaccination that is going to be cheaper than the other two or all three of them together. Can I just do that? Also making sure that I think bare minimum, we are doing parasite treatment. Can I ask the vet to buy it in bulk for me? Can I find ways to try to make this something that I can incorporate, and also asking the question, maybe grantors would provide the finances for vaccination or these other kinds of things if we ask them. Maybe we need to normalize asking them as well. But yeah, definitely don't feel bad if we struggle with that.
I think we need to normalize asking them, and I think we need to normalize educating them also on our specific, you know, on diseases that are transmittable and how we can prevent them. So, you know, how we are educating the general population about TNR, maybe we need to educate the bigger organization about TNVR.
Yeah, definitely. I think another limiting factor that you mentioned before, it also depends on the community that we live in and the animals that we're dealing with. For example, one thing I've heard is there is no point to doing one initial vaccination shot without a booster. Scientifically, I don't think that's true. It's introducing some form of protection, even if it's not the typical protocol of, you know, we vaccinate the first time around and then we do the booster and then we do it every year after. It is introducing a little bit of protection for a little bit of time, just like parasite treatment. But there are other reasons why we might not be able to do that. If we will never see those animals again, we're only going to get the opportunity to do the one vaccination. So then there's no point thinking about, well, we can't do it next month, so there's no point to vaccinate. In other cultures, in other cities, it is more possible to introduce vaccination from an early age. We have a friend with a really amazing TNVR project for both dogs and cats in Delhi, in India. They help thousands and thousands and thousands of animals. And they start actually by meeting those animals in communities and vaccinating them from a young age, putting them on the roster of, we're going to get back to them and sterilize them when they're old enough. And they begin that relationship with these animals as part of the community, with their carers as part of a community, to help familiarize that relationship and make the point of spay and neuter intervention a lot easier. And then they're also being able to introduce both rounds of vaccination for optimal coverage. So that's like a gold standard. That's an incredible achievement. And it's not something we're all going to be able to do, but it is something that some people will do somewhere, which is really cool.
Yeah, I admire that. And I wish we could all have this set up. But Adele, thank you so much for this first show. I really loved that conversation, and I hope, you know, everybody will find it as interesting as I found it. But yeah, so we need to wrap it up. But thank you so much for joining us on this adventure. We're really excited about it. But what we're more excited about is that we want to hear about what you have to say about TNR versus TNVR. We want to hear about your experience. So, you know, you can send us a DM on Instagram or Facebook, either under Saving Lives with Two A's or Travel Animal Rescue. For both, there's no space. It's all together.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is something that we both want to introduce, isn't it? Is this global, collaborative, communicative approach, not just us two people talking at everybody. Like when we start having guests on, they're going to be from all over the world and we're going to have totally global perspectives on all these kinds of things. Our perspective is just one part of what is out there. And people are doing incredible things all over the world, both at spay and neuter and all different kinds of preventative and rescue work. So yeah, we're really excited for the future and the coming weeks of meeting some of these people and introducing them to you and hearing more about what's going on in the world of rescue.
Yeah, exactly. And in the meantime, we just want to tell you, stay out of trouble and keep trapping to save the streets one animal at a time. See you soon.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.